Salvador, hey, you guys. We learned before, last week we talked about the money plays such an important role. Talked about the chukka which people have, all of us have, to have money. We said that kesef is miloshen kisufin, that for which a person longs. We try to analyze, like, why Hashem made us that way, why the Rebbein Shem want. We should have such a strong urging for money, which has really no hanoah in itself. It's just what you can get for it. Find people have everything that they need in terms of practical usage, and still they want more. So we discussed that that was a koyach which the Rebbein Shlalom put into human beings, because it is fitting and it's right that a person should long limitlessly, that a person should want more and more and more and more and more of the right thing. What Rebbein Shem wants is that we should crave ruchnius to Hashem. There the takan no limits. And it's not shy to say, I just want this much and I don't want more. What we do is that we take this koyach and kid ourselves into thinking that it's worldly things that we need, and that's where half the trouble comes from. The koyach itself is a legitimate koyach. So from discussion of Koheles goes now to the question of wealth. A person has wealth already. He has property, owns things, geared towards it. Good for the Jews, is it bad for the Jews? What should he do about it? And he starts off that Yesh ro'o choylo ro'isi tachas ha-shemesh. See, that's a very, very bad thing. Tachas ha-shemesh, you remember we discussed that tachas ha-shemesh always means not tachas ha-shamayim, not in an olam habotik kind of way, but in an olam hazetik kind of way. Oysha shomu leva'olav l'ro'osai. There is such a thing as wealth which the owner has for his own damage, for his own disadvantage. For that, to understand what the pasuk means over here, to discuss again, we've mentioned it a number of times, it's very, very important, yesoid, which the Chavis Havavis talks about in the Shah B'Tochen, is that one of the basic mistakes that people make is that when they own something, when they have property, wealth, they make the mistake of thinking that the entire property which they have, the entire wealth which they have, was given to them for their own use. It's theirs. So I've bought my groceries, I've got my suit, I've got my things which I need. What am I going to do with the rest of the money? I go out and I buy things which are luxuries, or I could buy things which I don't really need. Why not? It's mine. And let's already say on the best oif, and he's giving stock already. So what more do you want from me? So you know that the Chavis Halvavis says a klal. So that's a very, very big mistake that people make. Says the property which people own can be divided into three categories. One of them is teref mezonot. That taka, the Chavis Halvavis says, that's yours. In other words, there is a certain portion of your property, of the things that you own, which, as a matter of fact, the Rebbein Shalom gave you for your use. Because the Rebbein Shalom creates a person. There's an inbuilt guarantee that he's going to supply him with livelihood, he's going to supply him with food, he's going to help him to continue to live in this world. And part of a person's property is teref mezonot, is the food which he needs for himself. Then there's another part of his property, and that is teref mozon ishto bono. Rebbein Shem gives a person enough to feed his family, wife and children. So This is why that is not guaranteed as unmodifiedly as the first. You have to be zeichah to that already. But certainly part of your property is there for feeding wife and children. And then he says there's teref kinyan. There's property that you have which the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't even earmark for you at all. Says you may be a shomer on it for your wife's next husband. That's the lashon which he uses. In other words, that the Ribbono Shel Olam may simply have been mafkid this money with you, not for your use at all. No, the Hashgacha decided you should have this thing, watch it, like he says, for your wife's next husband. You may die, and your other wife will marry again, and he's the person for whom the money was meant. Now, the trouble with this is that my money doesn't come labeled. Life would be very, very easy for me if on my weekly check from the office I'd have an exact breakdown from the computer. This much is your teref mezoina, this much is your teref mozan ishtar bonav, and this is your teref kinyan. Doesn't come that way. The Ribbono Shel Olam leaves that to me to decide. And that is where the problems of bitochen come in. In other words, how is a person supposed to figure that out? How is a person supposed to figure out what of his money is meant for his own use? What is called teref mezoina? What is called teref mozan ishtar bonav? And what's called teref kinyan? The computer doesn't release that information. So how does a person set about solving that? Do I have to have a bad conscience every time I go down to the grocery and buy myself some potatoes? Do I have to check myself and wonder, maybe the money I'm spending on this is not teref mozan, is not that which the Ribbono Shel Olam meant for me. Maybe it's teref mozan ishtar bonav, or maybe it's teref kinyan. So how does a person really solve it? You can get schizophrenia that way. Every time you do something, you spend some money, you have to have a bad conscience about it. I wonder whether you ought to or whether you oughtn't to. So what's the answer? Of course, implicit in the yesod of the Chayav HaSalvavus is that obviously if you do take money which was not meant for you, you own it, Chayav HaMishpat, it's yours. So if you do take money which wasn't meant for you, let's say it was meant teref kinyan, we'll soon see the categories of teref kinyan which are possible. So then you're taking something which is not really due to you. Where's the cheshbon going to be? Probably in Olam Haba. In other words, the Ribbono Shel Olam will say, okay, look, I had assigned so and so much Olam Hazeh for you, I had assigned so and so much for you. It's possible for you to take more, but it isn't due to you. It's not that which you should be using. You do go ahead and use it. You make a cheshbon on it. How do you decide? In as much as it doesn't come labeled, so I got to be able to make a decision. And the Ribbono Shel Olam can't possibly shoulder me with an impossible decision to make. If the decision is mine to make, then I must be equipped with the data which enables me to make it. There has to be some way that I can live, where I can feel fairly certain that when I do have this expense, I do go ahead and buy this kind of thing, that I'm doing something which is not misnagah to the Ratzon Hashem. So how do I go about that? What's a good way of solving it? Any ideas? No? Huh?
Then on your computer expenses, and then your idea of expenses.
Yeah, well, what are my expenses? In other words, is it okay for me to buy butter for my bread, or do I just have to eat dry bread? Right? Aha, so how do I determine my needs? That's what I mean. In other words, somebody wants to be erlich. And what I want to say, okay, let's accept the premise. The premise is that not all the property which I own was meant for me. Now what? What do I do? Ruin the two members on the blink. So what do you do? What do you do? No ideas? Best you can. What are the parameters? In other words, how do you do the best you can? What are the yesoides which you're going to use in your decision? What are you going to do about it? Yeah?
I guess anything that will help you be Ovid better, anything which is needed in terms of one's devoted to Hashem, and again, that depends on the person, is what a person really needs.
What Moshe is saying, what I suspect is right, is that this is where we get into the famous Mistapik B'mu'ot Indian. In other words, as long as a person sticks within reasonable boundaries and spends what he has to spend or what he conceives as being necessary for him to spend, he can be pretty sure that the Divine Shem won't have kindness to him. What other criteria does he have by which to judge? What's reasonable? What are the factors, do you think, which might enter into a reasonable expenditure? What are some of the factors? I mean, Tachlis Gered, what's Taka reasonable? My dining room chairs are shaky, they come unstuck, right? I can go and I can buy secondhand, I can go and buy new, I can go and buy some, pick up some apple crates at the Giants, and sit on those. How do I make a decision? What are some of the factors? What's a reasonable piece of data to put into the machine? What ought to play a role, what ought not to play a role? What about neighbors? You think they should count? Is it either a good or a bad, or is it neutral to do what my fellow people over here in Yeshiva Lane do? Ought I to care? Ought I not to care? No? All right, Moshe, thank you. So it's a reasonable chesed.
Well,
it's the
kind of person is going to be affected. Not everyone's going to be affected by his neighbor, but if the person really feels, and again, depending on how honest the person is with himself, that he is affected.
Well, let me ask you this much. All right, yeah. Is it going to affect my avodas Hashem? Now, let's say I sit down and I talk it out with my wife, and we decide it's going to affect our avodas Hashem. Ah, we're going to be miserable. All the shaky chairs, it's going to be shreklich, yeah? So shouldn't we sit down and learn Musa? And, man, yeah, a shaky conscience ought to bother me more than a shaky chair. So ought I to live with that? Is this something I ought to learn Musa about, you think? You know, should it occupy a central role in my thinking? What do you say? Yeah. Is that something which is an important judgment? Let's say I should sit on apple crates, right? But my neighbor's going to wrinkle his or her nose. Should I mind? No, it's a ganz kosher Hermann, yeah. Yeah, well, of course you're right. There are no absolutes. The question, of course, is, yeah, let's get to this issue, for example. The famous Musa learning. Should I learn Musa that it shouldn't bother me, assuming that it does? See, in practical terms, right, I think that the neighbors, or let's put it this way, the given standard of the society in which the person lives, I think legitimately do play a role in such a decision. I happen to think that they do legitimately play a role. Now, one very important aspect where I think they play a role, and that's not something which I would have expected any of you to think about because you're not in the Pasha yet, but an important aspect where I think they bring a role, they play a role, is as far as children are concerned. It's tough for children to live at a standard which is very, very tangibly and objectively different than their peer group, than their neighbors. Matter of fact, I know a family. know a family where the parents are really, really very, very great tzaddikim. Very great tzaddikim. Very choshava people. Fathers of great talmud. And they talk of very, very mistafik lumur. And when I said about apple crates, I didn't just imagine it. That's what they have in their house. Now, there's not a stick of furniture in the house at all. It's just that. And that's how they live. And their life is a terrible tragedy. Children are very unhappy. Grown children, none of them are married. Children feel they can't bring anybody into the house. They feel inhibited about communicating with people. So here we have something which really you'd say for Etzem is a very admirable thing, that Olam Hazeh should matter so little to them that they're willing to have nothing at all. But that's backfiring. It can't have been, in my opinion at least, for the Bein Shams Rotzen. I mean, to the extent that we know we can't know anything in an absolute sense, but kefir ois enenu, that this had this kind of effect on the social ease of the children, and had, again, as far as we can see, such sad effects, the cheshbon must have been wrong. So it seems to me. I'll tell you a little story, a moshel, which you may want to remember. It's good. Somebody's important decide to know, just in my opinion. One point, I had a daughter learning in Beit Yaakov in Yerushalayim, and she wrote back, she was dorming with some girls who were brought up in a Gera family. And among the Gera Chassidim, some very, very admirable, wonderful hanhogas, especially in Inyonim Sneas, how they call them, Shiduchim, how they, the girls dress, how the whole relationship, the husband, wife, the family, it's very, very different to what we're used to. You come into homes, you know how we live, husbands and wives sit at the same table, we talk together, we interact, we have guests. We have daughters in the house. So it's very different. So my daughter wrote home to me and she said, well, why don't we do it right? In other words, why don't we accept these hidurim, let's say, in Hilchos Sneas? Let's grant, for example, that l'halacha, our standards would satisfy the halacha. But it can always be better. So why don't we shoulder these hanhagas? That's what she wrote on. Any of you want to make a suggestion? What would have been a good answer? One answer would have been and said, okay, with the tshuva. That would have been one option. What do you say? Not to stick out too much. Yeah. Why not? What's wrong with sticking out? What's wrong? Just stick out. Unless you mean if I'm very much, if I have a hanhoga which is very, very much different to my neighbors, perhaps I'll become proud. Is that what you mean? You got conceited, you got arrogant, stuck up. Is that what you mean? Yeah, I think that's a very, very valid question. I told her a little differently. I wrote her like this. I taped, I don't remember. I gave her a moshel. Somebody is making a bed. You got your sheet. Fits nicely on the bed. Someone made a bed, will know it. All right, you go to the one corner, tuck it in beautifully and nice and smooth it out and everything is beautiful. All right, so then you go to the other corner. Yeah, but it's only just pushing, slap a little bit, get that smooth, and then you notice that the other corner came undone again. That was the moshel I gave her. It's like this, if you pull too far in one direction, there's a tendency for other corners to become uncovered. See, a hanhoga may be objectively seen a very, very one, a very worthy one. And standing by itself, it may be something which would be a really, really good idea to do. But a person's only human. And there's a tendency to not be able to spread oneself too thin. So where such a hanhoga comes naturally, because the environment is very supportive, it's bred into one, and so it doesn't occupy a very important position in my consciousness because I do it automatically. And it's nothing particular, nothing special, and therefore it doesn't encroach very, very measurably on my attention. Beautiful. But if I'm going to make a great big issue out of it, where it doesn't come naturally to me, so then the odds are that as I'm smoothing this corner, I'll be pulling another corner. In other words, it doesn't fit smoothly, organically, into the way we do things. And who knows that if we, I told her, started being noyeg that way, that the concentration which that would call on us, and we'd be all busy, I'm not doing this, and I'm not doing that, and this, I have to do that, right? It might very well take its toll in quite different areas. Various aspects of Minot Mechaveh, or how I treat people, Moses Ochem of my home, and so on and so on. That may be in the apple crate story, right? Why don't we learn Musa and make do with shaky chairs? Maybe we should. The other side of that is, maybe we shouldn't. Maybe it's not important enough. Maybe go out and buy decent chairs, or chairs which in the framework of your reality are decent, and use your koiches and use your head and use your time for other things. So the bottom line is, there are no objective criteria, but a person sits down and figures things out, he can probably figure out fairly accurately. We mentioned now some of the things which might reasonably be used as data. which might reasonably play a role in making such a decision. But after he's got all the data in, and after he's got the feel for what his needs are, what's reasonable for him, what seems exaggerated for him, he ought to be able to make a pretty good decision. So that's teref mozaina, teref mozan amsha ishta, and so on and so forth. Now, what about this teref kenyan? Because that's what we're talking about here. So after I've been mistopic b'mu'ah to the extent that it's reasonable for me, by the way, from what we've been talking, nobody should conclude that it's okay for everybody to be just satisfied with the way it goes. Maybe there are areas where a person can cut down, a person should cut down. There is, I think, value in not schlepping out and having to have every latest fad or every latest thing, which even in one's own sviva become sort of accepted. There are limits. Oh, but what is this teref kenyan? So I've got my food, I've got my furniture, I've got my shelter, my clothes, children are clothed and fed and educated. So then, if we accept the Chovetz Chavos thesis, the time comes for me to wonder whether the rest of my bank account is mine. Did Ribbono Shel Olam mean it for my use? Or maybe not. And the moshel which the Chovetz Chavos gives for this third category, for this teref kenyan, is our pasuk. Right? That yesh oisha shomu levolav lero asoy. Yesh ro'o choylo ro'isi tachas ha-shamesh, oisha shomu levolav lero asoy. That Ribbono Shel Olam gave him this oisha, but he didn't give it to him for his ta'elus. In other words, he'll be tempted to use it, spend it, and it may turn out that using it and having it available wasn't a gift from Hashem, but it was an oinash from Hashem. Like Chovetz Chavos says, maybe you were shoyma for your wife's next husband. If you look in Vov, beginning of Vov, you have a very, very similar couple of psukim. And the shaila is, how do we understand that there shouldn't be any redundancy? In Vov it says like this, Yesh ro'o asher yisi tachas ha-shamesh, rabo hi al ha-adam, ish, asher yitun lo ha-alakim, oisha, unachosim, v'chavayt, ve'enenu chosel unafsha, mikoil asher yisave, ולא ישליטנו האלוקים לאכול ממנו, איש נוכרי יאכלנו. זה הבל וחולי רב הוא. So here we have a description of a person who was given wealth. איש אשר ייתן לו אלוקים אושר נחוסם וחבד, ואיננו חוסר לנפשו מכל אשר יסעבה. And he indulges himself and doesn't deny himself anything which he would want. But Ribbono Shel Olam is not going to be mashlit him to eat from it. Somebody else is going to eat it. He's going to lose it and somebody else is going to eat it. Now in what way is this different from our passage over here? Yesh ro'o choylo ro'isi tachas ha-shamesh, oisha shomo liv'olav l'ro asay. Ve'ovat ha-oisha ahu be'inyon ro, ve'hoilet ben, ve'en b'yodo mu'umo, kashe yotzim beten imo, orom, yoshev lo lechas, kashe bo mu'umo, lo yiso ba'molo, shi'yolech b'yodo. So what's the difference? Two passages, very close to one another. In both cases, the person was granted wealth. In both cases, he loses it. What's the difference between them? Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I think he's demonstrating two types of people, both who misuse their love.
Okay.
One who just sits in and hoards it, and the other one who totally indulges, leaving over plenty. But both of them have the same thing in common, that they're using their money incorrectly and will be taken away and given to somebody else, perhaps.
Okay. Where do you see in Pasha 1 that he's hoarding?
Because he's just shomer. He's not spending it at all.
Who agrees? Here we have some interesting Pashanus HaMikra. Who thinks that this is correct? Or incorrect? Anybody have any opinions? No? Any ideas? I disagree. Not for Be'etzem, the idea would be very, very nice. In other words, it would make a lot of sense if, in fact, there were two parshas like this. In other words, that one parsha is talking about a profligate spender who spends a lot of money, indulges himself, and the other one is a miser who hoards it and doesn't spend it. I could live with that. I don't think the words yield it. Osha shomul. It's not talking about his being shomer. It doesn't say that he tucks it away in the vault. Shomur, it's talking about in the passive. It is set aside for him. I think by the Rabbanu Shlomo. In other words, I don't think it's talking about the way he spends his money or doesn't spend his money. So I don't really agree. Any ideas? Well, I think that a code word over here, maybe, if you go to Vov base, Isha Shayitan or Lakim, Oshan, Chosim, Chovat, Venen, Chosir, Nafsha, Mikola Shayis Ave, Velo Yashli Tenu, Halakim, Lechon, Mimena. So if you take this word, Yashli Tenu, which means what? Sholat, to rule, to control, right? Look a little further in Hay, just by where we went just now. In Hey Yud Zayin, Kohelet starts telling us what the right way is to function with one's property. Let's have a look at the nice way. Hinei asher u'isi ani toiv. You know what's a good way to live? Sheyofe le'echol v'lishtos ולראות טוב ובכל אמור לו שיעמול תחס השומש מישבו ימי חיוב אשר נוסן לאלוקים כי הוא חלקו. גם כל האדם אשר נוסן לאלוקים או שנחוסן והשליטו לאכול ממנו. Here we have this lotion sholat again, we'll explain it in a moment. ולא עושה את חלקו ושמור ואמור לו זו מטס אלוקים היא. Well, let's go first to the earlier pasuk where he describes a nice way. Can you see something very, very suggestive in that pasuk about how a person's supposed to be happy? Remember we had the pasuk last week? Ohev kesev lo yisba kesev. Umi ohev behomon lo sevua. See the contrast over there? What's making this fellow happy over here? He's eating, he's drinking, he's happy. And what makes him happy? V'liros tova b'chol? No? No, you have an idea? No, what's making him happy? Danny, come on. Yo, where do you see that? Huh? So, aren't you editorializing a little bit, Danny? What does it say? What's making him happy? Huh? Not by me, it doesn't.
Well, he's in his position. That's what he.
Let's try again. Toiv asher yofe lecho v'lishtos. Let's just translate the words. Let's not read into the pasuk what we think, but let the pasuk talk to us. Now, what's making him happy? V'liras toiv v'chol amolai. Shiyamal Tachas HaShemesh. What's making him happy? Huh? The Amal. And there you probably have the answer. Right? See, earlier it said, I have kesef lo yisba kesef, umi ohev behomon lo sevua. Where does a person get his satisfaction from? What gives him his kicks? Is it the hormone? Is it the amounts? Is it because I've got a whole big silo full of stuff? Is that what makes me happy? And you're in trouble. Because if you're going to need this amount to make you happy, so then it's going to be a very short-lived kind of thing, because this amount is only going to make you happy as long as this amount is a chiddush. But once you've gotten used to the idea of having this amount, so then you'll need the next amount to make you happy, right? But what if your pleasure, your joy, or your tova doesn't come from the accomplishment? Let's say it comes from the omar. Let's say it comes from the work that you put into it. Feel yourself constructive, you feel yourself creative, you're doing something, you're working, you're producing, you're being useful to people, society, you do mitzvahs to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. That's where the chiluk lies. See, a person who is happy, not because he has accomplished this or that, but because he's working and trying to accomplish it. In other words, he sees his success not in having succeeded, but in having done his best to bring about the result. He can be happy. Because there, he's got a terrific insurance against feeling bad or feeling depressed at any time. What makes us bad? What makes us feel bad, I mean? I've invested a lot of koyach in something, and I've tried, and I did everything which was possible, and then it flopped. So how do you feel? Lousy. Why? Because you saw the measure of your success, you saw the measure of whether or not what you were doing as useful, in whether or not you would accomplish it. So, you didn't accomplish it, you're in bad shape. Effort was wasted, I invested so much time, and now the whole thing blew up. What if that's not the measure of success? What if the measure of success is the fact that I tried? The fact that I put my best titles into it? So then whether or not I succeeded at any, is very relevant. I feel good anyway. Tell you what Ron Newberg always says? I quoted it to you once, right? Man darf tun nicht auftun, right? Man darf tun nicht abtun, man darf tun nicht. And the last one? Nicht nachtun. Who knows Yiddish well enough? Anybody? All right, man darf tun nicht auftun. You've got to do, but not necessarily accomplish. Right? Man darf tun, you've got to do, nicht abtun. Not try to rush it. Put in the koiches which it needs. Don't try to putter things up. Daftan is nachtan means you've got to do your own thing. Don't copy it. What Yana does, it doesn't make it good for you. But the main thing is, daftan is nachtan. Not always necessary, it's never necessary to accomplish for one very simple reason. Because what would be mechayev? That the measure of my success would be whether or not I accomplish that which I set out to do. What would be the philosophical underpinnings of that? So the Rebbeinu Shel Olam would have to come on to me, right? In other words, if we postulate that X is needed to be done, this yeshiva has to be built, this business deal has to be closed, this cure has to be effected, whatever it is, right? So if you would postulate that I'm the only person who can bring it about, so then if I try it and I don't bring it about, I'm in trouble. The world's in trouble. Rebbeinu Shel Olam's in trouble for the offerings that didn't happen. When you get to think of it, you discover that habe shluchim lamokan. If the end is a desirable end, the thing is something which really ought to happen, It's not likely that if I don't succeed in producing it, that the whole thing is going to become bodily. So Lubavitch would find a different answer. The question is, have I done what I was supposed to do? Did I give it my best? Did I give it all my koichos? Then I can be happy, then I can be zufrieden. You know, if you can develop that kind of an attitude in yourselves, we can develop it in ourselves. It can save us from a lot of very, very ugly kind of mistakes in life. Now, one of the ta'usim which we sometimes make is that we are active in trying to do something. It's a worthwhile end which we try to accomplish. And we think that it's a kedaitika thing to do, we ought to do it. It's a good thing to do. So sometimes we become so intoxicated with the perceived need to do this thing that we're willing to use means to bring it about, which sometimes aren't so kosher. Maybe they're not right. Sometimes we're involved in kirov v'chaikim, and we make pshatas which we shouldn't make with our own standards. Maybe building a moisa, the title of the moisa, and we cut corners in it. An erlichkeit which we shouldn't. And it's always because we feel that the thing has to be accomplished. We could understand that it's not the end which the Rabbi Nishon wants from us, because the end he has other etzes for. But that it's the effort, it's the trying. So then I wouldn't be nichshol in ta'usim like those. Because I know this hishtadlus I'm mechuyev to do, that hishtadlus I'm not mechuyev to do. So this is the man who finds the simcha in his omar. But let's see the buzzword over here. Gam kala odam shanosan lo elokim oishan ochosan vehishlito le'echol mimeno lo seis eschel kai. See, that's where the Nakuda is. You see, Loses as Chalkai. Talk about what we were talking before from the Chayim Salvavas. You see, the ability to take one's portion, the ability to use what is appropriate to use, but not to overdo it. That is called Shlita. That is called being in control. Vaisham gives me what? The big issue is he mashlit me? Does he help me to be a sholet over it? Do I control it? Or does it control me? Can I control myself and use just so much of it as seems appropriate according to the criteria which we discussed before? Or is it like that? It's a terrible advertisement. You notice it ever that for potato chips, try just eating one? Which is it? Which brand? Candy just one, right? Well, that's terrible. I mean, they're right. They sell millions of them. Because your tucker can't just eat one, yeah? But then the pshat is you're not a shaylet. You'd be a shaylet, you could just eat one. So in the next parasha over there, it's v'lo yashlitena, right? See, Oshu Rechovot ve'enenu choso l'nafsho mikol asher yisaveh v'lo yashliten elokim lechay. See, the difference between the person who lives correctly and the person who doesn't live correctly is whether he is a sholet. Does he control it? Can he stop? Once we've got that nikva in our minds, we can understand the chilek between the first pasha and the second pasha. See, the first pasha is Aisha Shomur Levolav Lero Asai. First Pasha is where the Rebbeinu Shem gave him the property as an Einish in the first place. That was the Ter of Kenyan, and the Rebbeinu Shem had a Cheshbon to punish him, and in order to punish him, the Rebbeinu Shem gives him this Aisha, and it's Lero Asai. The Pasha over here in Vov is not that way. It's not that the Rebbeinu Shem gave him the Aisha Lero Asai. Vayisham gave him the Aisha because he deserved it. His problem was that he lost it up. Those are the two pashas. In other words, given the Chavis Halavis Yisoid of Teref Kinyan, it's possible that the Oisha in the first place came to the person, the Roh side. That's what Peres is talking about in the earlier pasha. In the next pasha, he's talking about a much sadder case. That's where the Rabbi Shon gave him the Oisha because he deserved it. We ask every Rosh Chodesh, Oisha is a good thing, a wonderful thing, great gift of Hashem. Rabbi Shon gave it to him. But lo yashkutenu, instead of having some sadder, instead of being in control, instead of having a clear idea of what he wants and what he doesn't want, what he ought to have and what he ought not to have, he wasn't chosar nafsha anything, and he indulged himself beyond the limits of what was appropriate. So then, even an oisha which initially was not given to him l'rosa, turns into l'rosa by his poor husbandry, by his poor management. That's very sad. So those are the two pashas. I think we'll leave it here.